Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to another episode of Real Science Friday. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer.
Fred, whales, the evolution of whales, supposed evolution of whales, and Saturn. Those are our two topics.
The two topics are whales and Saturn.
Yeah. This is going to be good because we're going to read some quotes from the guy who was the discoverer of the main supposed ancestor to whales when mammals evolved into whales, and a guy who was a leader on NASA's Cassini spacecraft that's still orbiting Saturn, and it's been doing that since 2004. So this should be good.
Oh, absolutely. So we're going to start with the whale tail.
We'd like to start with the whale tail, literally and figuratively.
That's right, right, because
it's the whale of a story. But Fred, also, this is our telethon month here at Bob Enyart Live. And so Fred and I are going to share with you some science resources a bit later that you could learn more about whale supposed evolution and the evidence against the evolution of life on Earth, and also that the planets are young. They're not billions of years old, as is believed by atheists and Big Bangers. So that should be good, Fred. Our phone number, 1-800-8-ENYART, to get our science materials or any of our Bible study. Yesterday, we reached $1,300 in our $20,000 goal for the month. So if you get some science materials or other Bible studies or DVDs from us, that will help tremendously. All right, so Fred, what about the whale?
Whale?
Yeah.
don't evolutionists teach that life came from water?
Life came from water. Yeah, that's where life originated, in the sea.
That's what they tell you. Now, is it true that God has a sense of humor?
I guess. And how so? Yeah, I think that he does. But
yeah, so they say like tetrapods, mammals, came from water. Yet
yeah,
there's
life
a mammal
crawled out of the sea.
Crawled out of the sea.
And Granny from the Beverly Hillbilly says, the only sea I came from is Tennessee. But anyway, yeah, they say life came out of the sea, right?
Yeah. What's the whale doing in the water then? Because isn't it a mammal?
It's an air-breathing mammal that nurses its young. And so, yeah, why is it in the sea?
How'd that happen? So they theorize that land animals went back into the sea. They missed it so much. I want to be a fish. They did the whole Dr. Lip or Mr. Limpet. Wasn't that Don Knotts?
Yeah, that's right.
I want to be a fish. Yeah. So that was a mammal. He wanted to return to being a fish, so he went back in the sea. So they believe that whales came from life. Mm. They came from basically tetrapod, four-footed animals.
And evolutionists disagree. Some paleontologists say it was a hyena-like animal that started wading into the sea at the surf and liked it and kept going until it could dive underwater for, 20 minutes and all. Or some say it was a cat-like animal that did this. But molecular biologists are now saying, no, it was a hippopotamus.
Yeah.
So the hippos went to the beach, to the seashore, and started just hanging out in the surf.
And somehow over time,
tens, hundreds of thousands of years, started to gradually get more comfortable. But Fred, the fun thing about this is there's a scientist, an evolutionist, Dr. Philip Gingrich, and his discovery it's in the textbooks, it's in the museums all over the world. If you ask an evolutionist, show us a good example from fossils of some species evolving from some other species. Well, they'll say, the whale evolution is a great example. And you just pulled up a picture on your cell phone of the Wikipedia article on this supposed intermediary species evolving into a whale. And what was this thing?
It's a Rhodocetus.
A Rhodocetus. And it shows it with a tail like a whale, right?
It shows it with a tail like a whale, and then
sort of flippers, limbs that are evolving into flippers.
Yeah, so basically it was a land-walking animal, and he's slowly evolving flippers where right. his legs used to be.
Right, so there is a quote. Now, we've been offering a DVD here at Bob and Yurt Live from Dr. Carl Wieland, The Living Fossils and Evolution, The Grand Experiment, and he has two DVDs that I highly, highly recommend. And he found Dr. Philip Gingrich and interviewed him on camera, and you could see it in Fred. It is just so stunning. Do you have this first quote? Because Dr. Carl Werner noticed that the fossils on display at the University of Michigan in a museum, but there were no bones that indicate that it would have a tail like a whale, a fluked tail. You know those sort of horizontal paddles at the back of some fish, dolphins yeah. and whales? They have that fluked tail. And so all the drawings and the models of this Rhodocetus shows it with a whale-like tail. And so Dr. Carl Werner, who is a creationist, a biblical creationist, said, well, there are no bones that show it would have a tail like that. So why does it look like that?
Well, he said that I speculated that it might have had a fluke. I now doubt that Rhodocetus would have had a fluke tail.
He doubts.
So he speculated. He pretty much made it up that it had a fluke because of his presuppositions and his worldview.
Right. He is an evolutionist, and he figures whales evolved from some kind of land-like creature. So here's a fossil that's a little bit new to us. So let's let our imagination run, and let's make it look like a whale with flippers and a whale's tail. And so he says, I now doubt that it would have had a fluke tail. And so then Dr. Werner asked him, well, how about the flippers, right? Because we've got bones of this thing, and there are no bones that indicate that it would have had flippers.
Yeah, so he said, since then we have found the forelimbs, the hands, the front arms of Rhodocetus, and we understand that it doesn't have the kind of arms that can be spread out like flippers on a whale. So I wonder if this guy was just was a creature that really liked to snorkel. Because when I snorkel, I put on flippers.
Right. So, Fred, this here, I mean, this is offered as one of the best examples of the evolution of a major kind of animal, here a whale. So you ask an evolutionist, well, where's a good example? Well, look at the transitional fossils showing the evolution of a whale. And the key to that story, I mean, without Rhodocetus, it's not a story. This is the keystone of that story. Rhodocetus, they say, is the best. So Dr. Philip Gingrich, who found it and drew it so that it looked like a land animal that was evolving into a whale with a whale's tail and limbs that are becoming flippers, he says, well, you know, I speculated, and I now doubt that it had a fluke tail. And regarding the fins, I actually now know that we've found more fossil bones of Rhodocetus. And, you know, it doesn't have the kind of limbs that spread out like flippers on a whale, so it shouldn't be presented that way either.
And yet, here it's still presented that way, even on Wikipedia. It still has the
Wikipedia to this very moment.
Yep, still misrepresents it. And who knows how long this stuff will stay in the textbooks.
In the museums and in the and make a guess. Just guess. I realize it's just a wild guess, but what do you think? Rhodocetus, how long will it be in our biology textbooks for high school and college as a great example of whale evolution? With the tail and with the flippers, you know, limbs evolving into flippers that now the discoverer admits are both not valid.
So how long will it be in the textbooks?
Yeah.
When do you think Jesus is coming back?
I would
40 to answer. 50 years. I mean, if you think about the false embryos that were supposedly,
the gill slits in a fetus, which is false, and evolutionists are so unreasonable that they adamantly retain that argument that a fetus has gill slits.
Yeah, and you still see that in some of the textbooks. Now, it's made its way out of some textbooks, but it's still there. There's all kind of Ramapithecus. I can go on and on of the things that are still in the textbooks that have long since been refuted.
A while back, you checked out what biology, evolutionary biology textbook was at use in CU, University of Colorado in Boulder, and you went out to buy one, right?
Yeah, well, I went to the library, and I wanted to find out what was their current book they were using for their evolutionary studies, and there is a book called Evolutionary Biology. It's written by Douglas Fudiyama, something like that. Mm-hmm. So I bought the book, and I read it from cover to cover, and it was interesting. I never found a single example in this book of invertebrate fossil sequences. We have virtually a complete record of invertebrate fossils.
Mollusks like clams and all. Yeah.
So our imaginations can't run wild, right? Because we've got the specimen. Mm-hmm. We can't make it's harder to make things up. Mm-hmm. So evolutionists love to go to vertebrates because we have a lot less fossils. In fact, if you find a fossil of a vertebrate, it's worth money in the fossil record.
Yeah, it's exciting.
So I got to one part in the book about whale evolution, and you know they don't even have that many examples.
Whale evolution. All right, so that was in your book.
It's in the book.
This is newer information, thanks to Dr. Carl Werner. That's how we know. That's how the world knows that the discoverer of Rhodocetus says, you know what? It didn't have a fluke tail. It doesn't have appendages evolving into limbs, so I overstated the case. This is newer information. What did your textbook say
about
whales?
That textbook said that the evolution of whales is becoming increasingly well documented. Hmm. So then you go to the next paragraph, and it says one of the most important discoveries is Pachycetus, known from a skull. So I had to pause there for the drama. Pachycetus, known from a skull.
So it's one of the best examples of whale evolution, and it's known from the skull.
Yeah, I show these direct quotes.
How many tailbones are a part of the skull?
So I show these quotes in my presentations, and I ask, like when I'm presenting to like high schoolers, I show them a baloney detector thing. It's a baloney with a little, you know, magnifying glass.
Yeah.
Get out your baloney detector, because here he's saying it's well documented. Then he gives an example from a skull, and the one thing he's not telling you in the book, all they had were two pieces of the skull. They had about 20% of that skull, and out of that skull, they drew a nice, pretty picture of a half whale, half wolf.
And that's what Dr. Philip Gingrich did with the Rhodocetus.
Yep.
They have a creature that obviously is a real live creature that was killed in some upheaval. It doesn't have a whale's tail. It doesn't have appendages that are evolving into whale-like fins. But if you draw them in that way, then look, you've got something for the textbooks and the museums to say, look, we have a strong transitional fossil record of how whales evolved. An evolutionist will believe it like it is gospel truth.
Yeah, it's amazing. So we're here to undo the tail.
Undo the tail. And Fred, I highly recommend, and this ties into our annual September telethon to keep Bob and Yurt Live and Real Science Friday, keep it going and broadcasting on the internet and the archives available indefinitely, maybe till the Lord returns, and live streaming the whole thing. And it costs a lot of money to do all this. So if you can help us, our goal is $20,000 in one-time gifts during September, and 50 people who pledge $20 a month.
So what's the name of the DVD again? Because it's really good.
Carl Werner's DVD, Evolution, The Grand Experiment. And it's episode 1 and 2, volume 1 and 2.
And they can call into the show, or they could go to the internet at kgov.com, right?
That's right. kgov.com, click on the store, or call us at 1-800-8-NYARDS, 1-800-836-9278. With a pledge, maybe $20 a month, $50 a month, maybe subscribe to our monthly topical DVD. You could get a DVD in the mail every month automatically for $25, or a Bible study, a whole album for $35 a month. So there are a lot of ways to help keep us reaching out to people. And maybe in a moment we'll talk about the age of the earth debate that you and I presented an overview of this at a Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship meeting. That was a lot of fun. And we have that. You could listen to the whole moderated debate on an MP3 CD or downloadable.
So you were debating the Reasons to Believe group here in Denver, which is a Christian group, but they believe in an old earth.
Yes.
And so from what I understand, they don't sell this DVD on their website.
I don't think they do. I don't think they sell it, but we do, because even an atheist physicist who was at the debate, he flew in from Seattle, he said, you know what? The young earth side won the debate.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it was really fun. And there's another debate we have in book form called Does God Exist? Pastor Bob Enyart debates atheist Zaketh. And it's a 10-round moderated debate, book length, really fun.
It is really fun. There's some humor in there. There's a good storyline to it, too.
Yeah, it's a great debate.
I won't do any of the spoilers for you.
Okay. All right.
It's a great book.
So, Fred, Rhodocetus is the icon of whale evolution, and it's false. It was false from the beginning, virtually fraudulent, and now it's admitted that it was false by its discoverer, Dr. Philip Gingrich at the University of Michigan. So now how about the Cassini space probe? That was launched by NASA back in 2004, and one of the team leads, he's a system administrator on the project. For how many years did David Coppedge work on Cassini?
He worked on it for 14 years, and out of those 14, 9 of those years, he was one of the team leads of the Cassini project, which is this...
This is huge.
Yeah, the spaceship that
this is years earlier, in 1977, we sent out, remember Voyager?
Yeah.
1 and 2, and they're like 33 years out. They're way farther out than Pluto is from the sun. They're just way out there, and they were designed to take a look at Saturn and Jupiter on their way out, which they did, and they're still transmitting data back, but Cassini is the most advanced outer planet spacecraft ever launched, and so here we have a chance to learn from the observations of one of the team leads on Cassini, and this is fun because it's still orbiting Saturn for 7 years now. And it has been sending back information and photographs, video of Saturn, the planet, the ring system, which is wildly complex, and its moons, Saturn's moons, Shepherd moons, the whole bit.
Yeah, and evolutionists are confounded by the findings that Cassini's reporting, right? Mm. Don't we hear that a lot on this show? We talk about how evolutionists are baffled, they're amazed, they're confused by the data because it doesn't fit their worldview. Here we have again a Cassini spacecraft developed by NASA Jet Propulsion Laboratory, and it's confirming the young Earth viewpoint, or at least it's refuting the old Earth viewpoint, right?
Yeah, it sure is. For a moment, let's talk about the main rings and how clean they are and how dirty they'd be if they were billions of years old with space dust. But first, how about that moon Enceladus? That's one of the moons of Saturn. And isn't there evidence, like with so many of the moons of the planets of the solar system, but isn't there strong evidence there that Enceladus is not 4.7 billion years old, as is claimed for the major features of the solar system, but it must be young?
Yeah. Back in 2005, they noted that it was erupting water, ice, dust, and gas out of its south pole in really powerful geysers.
So it's erupting. That takes a lot of energy, right?
Yeah, it does. And so the Cassini spacecraft in March 2011 was able to measure this.
And it turns out that the heat was way more than they had suspected. They had thought, wow, there's a problem here with Enceladus because it's using up energy in these eruptions, and it's using up heat. But it turns out now, in March, that it's using up 10 times more energy than earlier estimates. And they're calculating that how can this have been going on for billions of years? These technical papers from NASA, from JPL, from the government.
Yeah, Jet Propulsion Laboratory, yeah.
They're saying, you know what? There is no known combination of factors that can keep this activity going on for billions of years. So it seems like there's the fountain of youth on Enceladus because it's got to be young.
It's got to be young.
Based on what we know of it and the physical sciences.
Yeah, the amount of energy it's pumping out. So there's no known way that this could be going on for alleged billions of years existence of this moon.
Well, then you look at the rings. And Fred, no matter what you look at, the old earthers seem to be baffled.
They lose on all of them.
Like the sun and how fast does the sun spin versus the planets. They lose on that. They lose on so much. And here, Saturn's rings are not the smooth raceways that we always thought they were. They're very dynamic. They are constantly being bombarded by solar wind and sunlight pressure, drag from gas, internal collisions, and micrometeors.
Yeah, they discovered a really huge comet that had banged into the rings. So they're under constant bombardment. So why are they still in, you know, essentially a pristine state, at least to our eyes?
Essentially a pristine state.
You know, how could it be that way for, you know, billions of years?
And so here's what NASA is finding out, that the ice in the rings is remarkably clean compared to how much contamination was predicted if the rings had been there for billions of years. They should not be clean like they are. So each of these tend to be chronometers. They give you an outside age of, say, the ring system. And when it was believed that they were there for billions of years, now it turns out, you know what? They can't be there for billions of years. They had to have been formed recently.
Yeah, and again, he provides several citations of papers where these scientists are admitting that the rings look young. Well, maybe there's a reason they look young.
Yeah, because
maybe they are young.
Maybe they are young. That's right. So scientists have struggled to keep the rings old. And by the way, this article is in Creation Magazine. In fact, both of these articles, The Whale Evolution Story, A Whale of a Tale, and this article on the Cassini Space Probe, A Young Saturn, by David Coppedge, who was this team lead for NASA's project. He was 14 years on the project, 9 years the team lead, and the article is by him.
Yeah, he gets firsthand information on a lot of stuff pouring in from Cassini.
Right.
And his article, the reactions to it.
Yeah. And his article is only a few pages long with beautiful photos of Saturn. And it is heavily documented. There are 23 references, mostly to secular, mainstream, NASA type JPL sources. And so this is not just somebody who's closing their eyes to real science and saying, oh, I believe Saturn must be young. Yeah, Saturn is young because God created it recently. But then the science should affirm that. And so here's the good science. Talk about spending billions of dollars to gather information. And it just goes on and on, Fred. So these atheist scientists and evolutionary scientists, they want to keep the rings old. So they have to say, well, maybe the rings get recycled. You know, recycling is very popular.
Yeah.
But even if they were recycling, it's not going to be like one day they say, okay, throw out the old rings, bring in the new.
Yeah.
And so these are secondary, tertiary assumptions that don't fit the data.
Well, they bring in stories that don't have evidence to back them. So they're relying on nothing but the lack of evidence. Mm-hmm. That's their evidence.
So, and then other than the visible rings, there are faint rings, and David Coppedge writes about them. There are very tenuous rings, like an F ring. You know, they're lettered, numbered, an F ring that is continually plowed by one of the shepherd moons, Prometheus. And there are fragile arcs in the G ring. And there's a newly discovered Phoebe ring orbiting Saturn backwards. And Fred, backwards, we've got planets that rotate, like Venus rotates backwards. And this is so extraordinarily difficult to accomplish if the solar system formed from a spinning gas cloud that condensed, then everything generally should be going in the same direction, except the sun has all but stopped spinning. And you got Venus spinning backwards.
It actually should be going in the same direction. It's the conservation of angular momentum. there should be no violations to it. Yet here we have planets spinning backwards, the ring spinning backwards.
Right.
And it's a law of physics that's being violated if evolution is true.
And you know how the evolutionists don't like catastrophes? They don't like us to appeal to catastrophes. Except when they describe the solar system, every planet, every moon, everything requires catastrophes. And so Venus, with just the right, most extraordinary catastrophes, maybe you could get it to start to rotate backwards. But so difficult. And they have that problem with virtually every planet, as people could learn about in this fabulous DVD, Our Created Solar System, What You Aren't Being Told About Astronomy, that we offer here at Real Science Friday and Bob Inyart Live. Fred, this is by Spike Basaris, a friend of our Real Science Friday show. And this goes along so wonderfully with this article by David Coppedge.
That's right. And again, these are some of our favorite materials that we're letting the audience know about, and it'll really help if you could consider purchasing these and help us stay on the air.
Yeah, it really would help. Saturn has a moon. Maybe one last little detail. Saturn has a moon, Iapetus. And Iapetus, half of it's black, and the other half of it is white.
It's white as snow,
and it's black as charcoal. And it's mystified scientists literally for centuries, including in 1981 when Voyager went by. It was still a mystifying scientist. Well, now Cassini has figured out why it's white and black. There's ice on one side, and there's a runaway migration of bright carbon dioxide ice, and about 12% of that ice, of the ice that's migrating from one side of the moon to the other, is lost to space. It's gone.
About 12%, right?
12%. So it would have had to have ice miles thick of ice to start with just to survive a third of the time that evolutionists say that this moon has been there. So what's going on? Iapetus is another example. Wherever they look, like the moon Titan in its atmosphere, the methane in Titan's atmosphere is irreversibly lost to space. And ever since Voyager passed by, science has known that there's a problem. And why is its atmosphere still there? It couldn't last like that for 10 million years, and it's supposedly there for 4 billion years.
That's right. It has an upper limit of 10 million years, which means it fits the biblical timeline of 6,000 years because it's in that range. It's not in the range of a billions of years old universe.
Mm-hmm. There's so much evidence that the old Earth claims and the old solar system claims are falsified. It's not true. These things are not that old. Like comets are young.
That's right.
For example, since we know that the atheistic view is falsified, then we look to see, well, if that's not true, what is true?
Yeah, so we need to get this evidence out to the world, right? And one of the ways we do that is if you could help keep us on the air.
Well, that would be tremendous. So if you could call 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278, perhaps you could pledge $20 a month. Boy, that would be such a thrill and such a blessing. Or you can get a DVD from us once a month, a topical DVD, or you could get some of our science materials. We have our Age of the Earth audio. It's an MP3 CD, or you could download it, start listening to it right away. You can get our Does God Exist debate with Zaketh, a lot of fun, 10 round. It's a book, a moderated debate. What You Aren't Being Told About Astronomy from Spike Basaris about our solar system, and Dr. Carl Werner's two DVDs, Living Fossils.
Just get these, order them, and send them to Bernie Goldberg. He said on O'Reilly Factor that you're a charlatan if you believe in 6,000 years.
Right, young Earth. Bernie Goldberg, he did that. I got to interview him here on this show, and he's a troublemaker. Fred, thank you so much, and please help out with our telethon, and may God bless you.